There's a Pebble Dash house in Collins Barracks Museum, and what's it doing there? It's standing there in the middle of the square, and I'm joined by Paul Cairns, the artist and town planner.
The title of the project is Beyond Pebble Dash, so it's basically an exhibition, a book, and an engagement program targeted at transition year students. The exhibition, as you say, includes a full life-size Pebble Dash house, typical of Dublin suburbs, and a small photographic exhibition of a family who lived there. The book is also titled Beyond Pebble Dash, and maybe if I explain a little bit about the engagement programme, it'll give more sort of backdrop to what we're trying to do. We're targeting transition year students and other youth groups of around that age to talk about what makes a great city, what makes a good city. So basically, schools from all over in Dublin are invited to contact the museum to partake in this particular programme. And specifically, we're asking them to look at what or discuss what makes a quality inner city. So we're asking kids who live in the suburbs, would they like to live in the inner city? If not, why not? What would they change about it? And teenagers who may live in the inner city, what do they like or not like about living there? And similarly, what would they change to make it better? And one advantage talking to teenagers is they're terribly honest, and they might say things, or they do say things, that policymakers and politicians would be more reluctant to say.
So do you think will these be the policymakers and politicians of the future?
Well, they will be, I guess, the politicians and policymakers of the future. But while they're teenagers, they're honest, and it's genuinely intended that their suggestions or their observations will actually feed into real thinking in the city council in terms of making the city better.
So this was a collaboration between yourself and.
Matty Roymy. My background is as a planner with economics and geography as before that. Matty is an architect and is also an art graduate. So there's a mix of disciplines there. And we did a book a few years ago called Redrawing Dublin in 2010. And so this project is in effect a follow-on telling or promoting the same sort of stories.
So I might jump a bit, but the booklet that goes with this is kind of a cut down version of the bigger Redrawing Dublin.
Yeah, it is like a pocketbook version updated from the 2011 census, full of information that Dubliners might find interesting about their city.
But Redrawing Dublin is a beautiful visual book. It's a great piece.
Yeah, it's 300 pages of a lot of coloured imagery in that. And again, trying to make the subject city making, planning, urbanism, which can, you know, be a bit abstract for some people, accessible, popular for including teens, but also policymakers. You know?
So it's a piece of art, but a particularly provocative piece to make you think about the social impact of housing.
Well, it is a piece of art. It's a sculpture, really, in the square of the museum that will be there till January. And we did get an award from the Arts Council, which part funds this. City Council is our other main sponsor. So it kind of works in different platforms. Art to introduce the subject of city-making housing. It's also an educational tool when the teens go up there and look at literally how the house is made. So just to explain for your listeners, the front is a real life-size pebble dash facade with brick porch and cement windowsills, etc. And the back then is a kind of skeletal steel frame that represents the walls, the roof and the chimney, and shows you look through the house. So,
and it seems quite small in the big square. Was that part of your plan? Or were those, are Pebble Dash houses that was built in that era just quite small anyway?
Well, I guess in terms of floor area, they are small enough. They vary a little bit, you know, 70 to 80 square metres. And in the 50s and 60s, many of them had 5, 7, 10, 12 people living in them. But it is interesting about scale and the whole subject of size and height and how big your home should be, how tall buildings should be. That's part of the educational programme. So looking at what looks like a doll's house in the middle of this 18th century square is intended to kind of provoke people or reflect on those type of questions.
A lot of the booklet that goes with it, and I presume then a lot of the educational challenge for transition years in that, is to look at spaces we live in. The inner city of Dublin is quite different from a lot of European cities in terms of how we use that space. Is that right?
I guess it is. It is, and it isn't. One of the maybe the biggest differences, the city centre of Dublin versus other European cities, is the quality of apartment homes. During the boom, we built an awful lot of relatively small homes. The minimum floor area up to about 2005 was 38 square metres. And you were allowed to build developments where 50% of all homes were that size. So today, in an area, say, in the north inner city, which is home to 20,000 people, which is the size of Athlone, 50% of all homes have one bedroom. And there is a housing crisis, but there's a worrying agenda from certain quarters in the estate agent profession, and some developers, some, to reduce our apartment sizes. And I think they're being somewhat disingenuous in saying that if we reduce home sizes further, we'll make homes more affordable.
Back a little bit, the Pebble Dash were probably built to get people out of tenements, to move them out quickly. So a lot of them were built then, and people did move from very cramped accommodation out to the kind of luxury of their own house and their own toilet and stuff like that. Do we face again a housing crisis where we need to build quickly?
Yeah, I mean, part of the focus on the Pebble Dash is, one, it is a genuine celebration of Pebble Dash homes, which have been overlooked to some degree in how we look at our city. You know, we celebrate our Viking heritage, our Georgian heritage. We talk a lot about the desire to live in a red brick, etc. But the Pebble Dash home as a house has been overlooked. So in one sense, we're celebrating that. And I grew up in one in Ballyfermot. But there's a more important message here. There was a housing crisis 50, 60 years ago. And the state and the city was, at that time, far more impoverished. We had a vision, and the corporation delivered on solving, to some degree, an acute housing crisis with the collapse of tenements, etc. And I suppose they were luxurious in terms of what people came from. But 7 or 10 people in 70 square metres, you know, in today's standards, is not luxurious. And so it's interesting that those homes were 70, 80 square metres, and apartment sizes are generally much lower. And so we have this odd thing in Dublin and Ireland where we don't really perceive apartments as for families. And perhaps that explains why we've delivered maybe a lot of poor quality apartments.
And when the city council built flats, again, a lot of the inner city flats, I mean, a lot of those, because I grew up in one, were fairly big. They were big enough spaces to live in. Was there a set space that the old corporation set out that was needed for a family, or for, is there a set number, as a town planner, is there a set number of square foot per person, or how do you know?
In relation to housing allocation, you know, it's worked in relation to size of the home and obviously the family's individual's needs, but for the development plan standards, we have we don't have a minimum house size, because there's never been really a problem in building small houses, so to speak, in the last 20 or 30 years, but there has been a problem in before standards were introduced of building arguably substandard apartment sizes. So today now the minimum is 55 square metres for a one bed and 80 to 90 for a two.
And do you know how many people more or less live in the inner city?
It depends how you define the inner city. Within the canal ring, 110,000 people live. Dubliners will be, in their own imagination, probably would define the inner city based on a different set of criteria than just the canal ring. We have defined the inner city in the book. as a tighter area, and that has up to 50,000 people.
Is there room for more people in the inner city?
There's quite a lot, actually, surprisingly. Despite 15 years of a building boom, there are city council in the city council's own statistics, 65 hectares of vacant land inside the canal ring. Now, to translate that, that's seven St. Stephen Greens inside the canal ring, which could accommodate quite a lot in terms of housing. So there is plenty of space, so to speak.
And as a place that people would desire to live, I mean, there's a lot of great things about Dublin City Centre, but do people want to live there?
Well, this is a kind of tricky one. On the one hand, people do live there and have chosen to live there. The population has massively increased. On the other hand, it can be a challenging place for families. As we highlight in the book, there is a deficiency in parks, local parks, relative to the rest of suburban Dublin, middle-class, working-class areas, playgrounds.
Football pitches.
Football pitches take up space, but the provision of football pitches in larger parks or on the roofs of schools and stuff like that, there's possibilities of using space in different ways. One interesting statistic is that 70% of those living in the inner city don't own a car, primarily out of choice because they're in that location, and maybe parking can be difficult if you don't have a car parking space in an apartment. But with 70% of people living there not having a car, you know, one has to ask, are the streets that pedestrian friendly to serve the residents who live there? I mean, it's not rocket science in terms of making the area more attractive to live, you know, green streets, safe, clean.
And would you think that too much of the city is designed for people to get in and out of rather than for people to live in?
We are and will remain effectively a suburban city. That's just the reality. And it's important to facilitate access to the city centre for those who work, for leisure, for recreation, etc. It's just striking the balance. Those who, if you work around the inner city during outside peak traffic times, a lot of the roads are just devoid of traffic. So you have kind of a sea of tarmac adam outside the peak traffic times that are, you know, not attractive, hostile, devoid of greenery, lack of trees. So it's striking that balance. Perhaps we're not quite getting that balance at the moment.
Is there a kind of mentality? I remember, I think it was Mary Harney, but I'm not entirely certain, that said we're closer to Boston than Berlin. Is that in our heads that we build big, wide, sprawling suburban cities based on cars, more like the States and less like the European norm?
Well, obviously most Dubliners live in the suburbs and they live in a house rather than an apartment or a flat. But I don't think we're genetically hardwired or, you know, determined not to live in a successful city centre or an apartment. I think the issue is choice, and if people make the best choice that's available to them according to, you know, their finances, etc., and where they choose to live makes sense to them. So if you don't provide a quality inner city environment with all those issues like safe streets, green spaces, children's play spaces, and quality large spacious apartment or flat, they chose not to live there. So perhaps we haven't provided that enough.
I've always felt that it's very important that elected councillors live in the area that they're elected to represent. Could that also be said of people who wield a lot of power within the city council? People like yourself, who's a town planner. I mean, is it important to live in the city that you make decisions over?
It's an interesting subject, and maybe it's slightly controversial, but I would totally agree with you. I mean, I live in the inner city, but compared to, I'll just tell a story about another city in Barcelona. When the new mayor got elected there in the 1990s, he deliberately chose to move his family around the city in different locations, which mightn't be great for the entire family, but he lived in four or five different locations in the city to get a sense of, you know, what makes a city and that part of the city work or doesn't work. I suppose it's not controversial to say, because the fact that most of our decision makers live further out and don't live in the centre of our city. And one could argue, and to some degree we have in the book, that there is a link between where people live and what they see and what they prioritise, or how they understand how the city works.
What about then, if you had a magic wand and you could change a couple of things, obviously not everything, what do you think would make a better city?
Again, it's basic stuff. A lot of the inner city is devoid of greenery. I mean, asking the students and the citizens of Dublin what would make them want to live in the inner city is an interesting first step. First of all, we have to avoid a kind of a race to the bottom to reduce home sizes, and it's an illusion that it will create greater affordability if we reduce the minimum floor areas for apartments. That'll make the city centre less desirable for families. We have some challenging antisocial issues in the city centre that are difficult to grapple with. We have to be honest about how we deal with that. And the issue of traffic and car moving in the city centre. I mean, I have a car, I like a car. We're not anti-car. But just striking the right balance that the city is, the city centre, inner city, is more pleasant to walk around. Kind of bread and butter stuff of city planning, you know. That.
So if there were bigger apartments with more families and more green spaces?
Well, I think children are a critical indicator or barometer of the attraction of a city. If people choose not want to live in the centre of your city to rear a child, it's a wake-up call that there's something up. And perhaps in Dublin, too many people think that, and we have to be honest why they think that and to address those concerns. I mean, if a city is safe, children are the most vulnerable people in any city. They're small, they're vulnerable to all sorts of issues in terms of antisocial, traffic, etc. So getting it right for them, I think, is critical.
I saw a television programme about Detroit, and the inner city was almost abandoned to huge antisocial problems, and the kind of middle classes had completely left and they were gone. And I think that there's still massive problems in Detroit. Is that something that could happen to Dublin? Will people leave because they don't see it as a desirable place to live?
No, I think we've made far too much progress in the last 15, 20 years. The population of the city centre has increased massively. The city centre, as we understand it, in terms of shopping, recreation, you know, culture, nightlife, is still hugely successful. It's just pitching to the next level, you know, that people can say, or desire to want to actually live in the centre of their city. I mean, we made progress in the Docklands and other parts.
Perhaps just as a final word, back to the art. How long does the exhibition run for?
The exhibition runs till the middle of January, and there'll be various events over that period. So on Culture Night, which is this Friday, we have a DJ, a live DJ, who's going to play around the house, in the house. And there's over the towards Christmas, etc., there's different events.
And on the educational aspect, again, if schools or anyone would like to get involved, what do they do?
Contact the museum directly. So it's the National Museum at Collins's Barracks, and the education department there, or Helen Beaumont is the contact person. We'll give information about that.
All right, Paul. Thanks very much.
Thank you.